Today's show is brought to you by Hearst Ranch Grass-Fed Beef, available on the internet at HearstRanch.com.
Hello, Greenhorns. This is Severin, and this is Greenhorn Radio. I am very happy to be today on the phone with Sebastian, who is calling in from Washington State, where he has been engaged for more than the beginning number amount of years in the growing of organic vegetables and is engaged in many levels of advocacy and support and structure of teaching. And golly, you do a lot of stuff, Sebastian.
Hey, Severin.
How's it going out there?
Oh, it's going good. Yeah, we're busy this year. You know, today is a harvest day for our CSA, and overall things are good. Right now I'm the director of a new farmer training program at Green Bank Farm, and it's basically an 8-month program, and folks come here, live here, stay for 8 months, and we grow an 8-acre garden, market to CSA and grocery stores, farmers market. We grow some seed, and managing that garden is all the experiential piece to solidify what we learn in the classroom, which we spend probably 3 mornings a week in the classroom talking about farming and marketing and business planning, and just, yeah, my goal is to help the students that come here, you know, fulfill their dreams of being able to start or manage a small farm and hopefully do that in a way that is profitable and, you know, heals our environment and satisfies their personal values all at the same time.
So I was on mute, and now I'm going to ask you a question again. So obviously there's a major explosion in the number of people who are interested in engaging in professional training in farming, and programs like yours and the Whigby Island School and the Bullock Brothers Permaculture Site and others around in the, Viva Farms and Growing Washington are... Mm-hmm. You know, popping up like mushrooms. Tell us yeah. why we should refer our friends and family to come farm in Washington State.
Well, Washington State's a big place, and I can talk about the Puget Sound area, but you know, it's a good place to farm. There's a lot of farmland. We've got quite a bit of water, and the culture from Bellingham through Seattle down to Olympia and on the Olympic Peninsula is a community that really values good food, has the resources to buy good food, and there's just a good food movement going on here, you know, collaborations between chefs and consumers, and there's farmers markets and farm to school programs, and so and there's just a lot of farm resources available, so it's a good place to get started. You know, I've been on the Olympic Peninsula, and you know, most of the farms that I've run have been really I've been pretty small scale. You know, I usually try not to market more than 20 miles away from the farm, and I've been able to do that, which has been great. And so, you know, I mean, it feels like the new organic small farm movement has been growing for quite a while. It feels like it's been mushrooming ever since I got into it 15 years ago, and it hasn't really slowed down. Although I do notice that it is a little harder, I think, for some folks to get going these days. I mean, when I was getting started, you know, farmers markets were wide open, you know, needing more supply and demand was high, and there weren't that many CSAs around, and, you know, things, I am noticing that, you know, there are, in some areas, farmers markets that are getting a little more saturated, and, you know, and there are more CSAs around, so I think new farmers do need to, depending on where they live, do need to come into the food system a little more creative, you know, maybe finding a niche, or, you know, just really knowing what they want to do and how to tell their message so they can really connect with the consumer and build that relationship that, you know, is so important.
So here you are now engaged in teaching and in advocacy around seeds and with your fingers in a lot of different spots. How did you come to a place of life balance from farm startup and managing other people's farms to being able to have the time to do both farming and all this kind of logistical support? Maybe just describe a little bit your journey.
Sure. I got farming mostly for the lifestyle, and I didn't actually really want to start a farm business. I just wanted to homestead and live in the mountains and be in nature, which is what I did to start with. But as I grew older and started growing a family, I realized I needed more resources and I needed to think about my farm more as a business, and that I could still do that without compromising my values of, being a good land steward and, providing healthy food for folks. So, yeah, I mean, as everyone listening knows, farming is hard. It's hard to make a living. It takes a lot of work. We do it because we love it. But in those years, I've, experimented, because the social component was so important to me, in working with nonprofits and educational organizations to see if I could, continue farming and keep my hands in the dirt while maybe getting a paycheck and, having a life a little bit easier financially. And it more or less, it works. I mean, it's all, depends what you love. In this coming year, I'm actually stepping down some of my hours here at Green Bank, and I'm going to be restarting a farm with my wife, just because a big piece of what I loved about farming was that, my family could stay together, I could work from home, and we haven't really done that for 3 years, and so we're looking forward to recreating that again. It's a challenge to find a healthy life balance, and you got to just really love what you do. When I haven't run my own personal farm in 3 years now, but when I did, I would farm production vegetables, all day, and then in the evening I would garden and grow my hedgerows and my beneficial insect habitat and mow the place and keep it looking good, and all those little things that make a farm extra special, that I just love doing that, and so that's what I would do with my spare time. But yeah,
so you even have spare time. I mean, this is amazing stuff we're hearing. 15 years in, and all of this sovereignty and authorship of one's life and holistic decision making. I'm very impressed. I look forward to the time when I'm less panicky.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm making it sound rosier than it is, but I mean, a lot of it's the attitude that you bring to it. I still get stressed out, CSA season's about to start, and do I have enough in the field? Am I going to have a big enough share? But, after so many years, and everything always works out just fine. And so, when those feelings do start to arise, when you're feeling overwhelmed or when you're panicked, I mean, it's best. If you've done that so many times and you know it's going to work out okay, then you just try to let those feelings go and just keep plugging away. And setting personal boundaries, I mean, letting go of things, I've had to really work on my perfectionist inclinations and to be happy with things less than perfect, because in the big picture it doesn't make sense to sometimes work on some details, or it's all about just prioritizing everything that's happening and keeping a good balance.
The thing is, there's thousands of observations being made every day, and only hundreds of alterations that you can make as a human to the living, to the systems that you're engaged with. It's like you can see all you want how you could optimize everything, and you might be right even with half of that, but it's just not possible to do it all.
No, exactly. You know, and I mean, and a huge piece of it is to constantly be improving your systems and, you know, making them more efficient and, you know, from everything from how you plant and weed to what, you know, what crops you're going to grow. And, you know, I'm a big advocate of doing a lot of, you know, winter and spring planning, you know, and I pretty much just tried to plant crops that I know I can sell, you know, because if you plant less than that, then you're not meeting your market demand and you're, you know, missing out on potential income. But if you plant more than that, you're taking a risk and putting a lot of work into something that...
So let's move on to another topic, which is organic seed, organic seed situations. And I know that there's big news in GMO labeling going on, and there's a ballot measure in California. There were similar ballot measures in Vermont and Connecticut, but there wasn't quite enough willingness to get down and dirty and to take on the legal battle with Monsanto. But in California, it looks like it's going to be likely passed. There was over 1 million signatures to that ballot initiative gathered. What's the news from the organic seed world?
Well, yeah, I try to keep up with, you know, what's happening with and policy on that. But, you know, to be honest, most of my focus is more on creating a new seed system that, you know, sure, we need to stop the bad things that are going on, but we also need to replace them with something positive and powerful and sustainable. And so in the organic seed movement, you know, what is that going to be? And, you know, and in my mind, we obviously need to get farmers back into the seed industry as active participants, not just purchasers of organic seed, but people who are involved in the breeding and the selection and the growing and, you know, ideally creating some regional networks where, you know, we can, instead of all of us using the same varieties across the nation, you know, maybe, you know, we've got 5 or 6 regions across the country and we have varieties that are specialized for each of those regions. And so, yeah, so I work with OSA and Organic Seed Alliance based out of Port Townsend. And so we're calling that, you know, participatory plant breeding model where, you know, professional plant breeders, whether they work at a university or for a seed company, you know, getting them to work with farmers as much as possible, and then giving farmers the skills to do variety trials and, you know, really look at, you know, what's available out there and then select varieties that do well for them, and then also give them the skills to take those varieties and improve them and further adapt them, you know, either to their climate or to their management style or to their soil types, whatever, you know, whatever criteria they want. But yeah, you know, going back in time, farmers were the seeds people, and now, you know, we're pretty much just seed consumers. And so, you know, reestablishing that skill set within the farm community, I think, is the most important thing.
And the initiatives of the Pacific Northwestern farmers have not escaped notice beyond the region. I've been in the region filming at the Willamette Bean and Grain Project, and with Adaptive Seeds and Lonesome Whistle Seeds, there's also Uprising Seed, Peaceling Seed. There's a whole bunch of new seed companies whose businesses are a direct confrontation of the monopolistic kind of market actions of the big seed vendors, and mm-hmm. it's right that that would be happening in your region because of the weather, but I think it's also likely that the work of advocates like Organic Seed Alliance have made it very clear, you know, that the alternative is viable and that there is support for those initiatives. Are there other, I don't know all of them, but maybe you could talk a little bit about this phenomena of the new seed companies.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much I can tell you, except, you know, the few seed companies that I've talked with who are, you know, relatively new, all organic, and, you know, and are direct marketing their seed, definitely the demand is very strong, and they're growing rapidly trying to meet that. And, you know, I think the consciousness of both farmers and gardeners is growing about the importance of having organic seed and, you know, and as much as possible open pollinated seed. And, you know, I mean, there's, you know, everything just happens in cycles, and, you know, when organic farming became popular, it was all about not spraying herbicides and pesticides, and then, you know, it became focused on, you know, cycling nutrients and organic matter, and, you know, and we've gotten through so many of the basics of organic farming that, you know, we keep taking on, you know, okay, well, what's the next step in this striving for, you know, complete sustainability? Okay, well, you know, and it seems, you know, right now in this time, it's we're at the point where, okay, we need to really look at our seed system and fold that into all our values that, you know, have guided our other organic practices. So, you know, I mean, there's still a big learning curve, you know, for everybody who's, maybe not everybody, but many of us who are in the organic seeds movement. You know, there's OSA is working hard to create some informational resources and do some research on, you know, what does breeding for organics looks like, and, you know, what tools do we have, you know, how are we gonna deal with seed-borne diseases, and how are we going to just maintain overall seed quality. You know, because that is something the organic seed industry has struggled with some in the past is, you know, a farmer will buy some organic seed and it won't perform as well as the conventional seed they've been using for many years. And so how can we, you know, it was either disease or it was either genetics or, you know, but how can we get the organic seed back to the point where it's a, you know, it's a viable competitor for a lot of the conventionally grown hybrids that are out there. And that's just, you know, it's going to take some time, and it's going to take a lot of education and experience. But, you know, conventional hybrid seed's been, people have been working hard on making that really good for 50, 60 years. And, you know, a lot of the OP organic varieties that are out there, you know, have only had someone really working with them again, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 years, and it just takes time to kind of really bring back some vigor and, you know, uniformity or whatever traits you want in that, in those genetics. So, yeah, it's just a matter of people having the motivation, getting out there and wanting to do it, and then, you know, asking for help and accessing and having access to the resources they need to do a good job.
So moving forward continuously in the right direction and addressing as they arise all of the factors that make the current agricultural system unsustainable, labor, seeds, fertility cycling, fixing carbon, mm-hmm. training the next generation, accessing land. That's definitely not going to be a boring next 40 years.
No, we've got a ways to go, that's for sure.
We have a ways to go. The other thing I've been thinking a lot about is just, like, the kind of experimentation that is going to be needed. And, you know, we've been working on this Young Farmers Almanac and going through a bunch of historic almanacs and farmers' bulletins and USDA yearbooks and just reading about the super progressive experimentation that was going on from the time of Jefferson onwards with cover crops and, you know, making experiments of variety trials and pushing boundaries of what grows where and, you know, just for the good of agriculture, taking on projects that may or may not work. And I really feel like that has kind of almost stepped out of the mainstream completely, that kind of progressivism. But I feel like it's so well in tune with the kinds of wild and wacky and out of the box, thinking outside of the boxness of small farmers and permaculture farmers and, you know, just like weirdos. There's a lot of weirdo. We have a lot of love for the weirdos in our community.
That's true. Yeah, and I think so many farmers I know. I mean, they're always experimenting, you know, and pushing the boundaries on their own farm. And, you know, I feel like the biggest missing piece there is that we need to make sure that we're sharing that information with each other, you know, I mean, because we are all a little weird, and I think many of us are also, you know, very independent, you know, if we're willing to go out into the country and work really hard and want to be close to nature. You know, we also have to remember that to be able to do that really well, we have to connect with our peers and share information. And, you know, I mean, and part of it's finding the time to do that. And so, you know, I know in all the different farming communities I've lived, I've always felt like there was a lack of communication between farmers, you know, and we really need to rekindle that as much as possible. You know, and then also give farmers just some basic skills in how to do, you know, randomized replicated trials, how to, you know, take some data, you know, try to keep it simple so that they'll actually do it, but then, you know, get it out on the web or get it, you know, get it shared with everybody so that we can all help each other, you know, move forward a little bit faster so that we're not all replicating each other's work and, you know, really seeing each other as trying to help each other out and definitely not seeing each other as competition. But, yeah, that's exciting. I love experimenting and pushing the boundaries.
I feel like that open sourcing and that communication is going to has the potential to arise in new media ways. I mean, we have a project called Farm Hack that we've been working on that's focused a lot on tools design. But I've been, you know, just reading these farmer bulletins from the 1910s and, you know, from the 1860s, like, people were engaged in long, protracted, like, forums, you know, with many different parties contributing. Long conversations about the details of their experiments. And I agree. This seems like a something to rekindle. We just went down a rabbit hole. Uh-oh.
Yeah, I mean, the Greenhorns, I mean, it's great what you guys are doing with your website and the Farm Hack. And, we just got to keep tying all these threads together and helping each other out, sharing information. I think it's going to make a big difference.
It's going to make a big difference. So there you go. We ran out of time. Oh, no, we didn't run out of time. Let's make sure that you give your plug for your program and for the regional offerings of the Puget Sound, and then we can we'll be in our concluding time.
Okay. Great. Yeah, well, I would encourage anyone who's, you know, interested in starting their own small farm, to check out Green Bank Farm, you know, check out lots of different opportunities. You know, I started off as an apprentice and jumped into farming, just running my own operation. And, you know, it's definitely one way to learn, and it worked for me. You know, when you're in the frying pan, you learn lessons quick. But definitely working with some mentors or going through an educational program and really getting the big picture of how to manage a farm and what to think about and how to run a small business, you know, can definitely accelerate a successful farming venture. So yeah, I invite folks to come on out to the farm. You know, if you're interested in 2013, you know, try to find a few days this summer to spend some time with us. We always welcome people to come work with us, listen to a class. You know, so much of living and working on a farm is also just the social component. And so we've got a great team of people that we put together each year. We've got a farmhouse that they live in. And, yeah, we work hard to study the ins and outs of organic farming and small farm business. And then we have a good time just working together, growing 8 acres.
Well, thank you so much for being there and for doing what you're doing and for urging everyone to get on the ball, be organized, proactive, think ahead, plan. and if you're thinking yep. about farming now is a fine time to think about farming for next year and expand your time horizon to the scale and scope that's possible for you right now. And maybe that means you could just do an experimental day trip or a weekend trip and start looking at the options for apprenticeships and programs for next year. Okie dokie. Yep. It's all
great,
happening.
Thanks, Severin. It's great talking
and,
with you.
One thing that I should remind everyone is we're having a workshop on July 8th. It's called Negotiation Makes It Happen. And actually, maybe Jack or Joe will put it on the end of all of our podcasts because it's an important negotiation and conflict management training. And it's free. It's in Hudson at the Basilica. It's organized by the Greenhorns and the New York State Agricultural Mediation Program. And it's all about figuring out what you want and getting what you want and negotiating with landowners, credit providers, and, you know, the whole rest of the real world as you start your farm business. So negotiation makes it happen. Space is limited. So get registered. farmer@thegreenhorns.net. Okay, thank you very much. Thank you to you, Sebastian.
Yeah, thank you. Great talking to you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on the Heritage Radio Network. You can find all of our archived programs on heritageradionetwork.com, as well as a schedule of upcoming live shows. You can also podcast all of our programs on iTunes by searching Heritage Radio Network in the iTunes Store. You can find us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter for up-to-date news and information. Thanks for listening.